Welcome to the Rise Method podcast, where we make fitness information available to everyone. I'm Steve. Let's jump in.
What's up, guys? Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Rise Method podcast. In today's episode, we're joined with our resident human, Laura. Laura,
you got it right this week.
I did.
Resident human.
It was a
what
lot
was
of
I last week?
Our relative.
Relative and resident.
Yeah. So you're resident human. You're our current challenger, our current human, hopefully that doesn't change, and our current co-host, hopefully that doesn't change either.
Well,
welcome
see.
To the show. How you doing today?
Yeah, good. I am sore.
Sore.
I went to a reformer Pilates class yesterday, which is rare. I teach reformer Pilates, but you never go to a class. Life commitments. It's nice to change up training a little bit and head to a different style of training. And my abidabs, are quite tender.
Did you cop a little bit of abuse?
I'm trying to think of a pun to throw back at you, but I've got nothing.
Are you able to keep on going?
I've got nothing.
Just go deep into your core and you can pull something out.
I'm just going to leg it out of that.
Absolutely. All right. So how are you feeling today? You're a bit sore, you're a bit tender. What have you been doing today to try to, you know, get moving again and get back into your body?
Well, I instructed 5 classes this morning. Mm-hmm. I walked over to get a coffee. I went to Coles.
Mm-hmm.
I have hit my current step goal. 12,362 steps.
So far,
it is, I don't know what time it is. 3:25 in the afternoon. We'll continue moving around. Got to go pick up our boys later this afternoon. And then just probably have a bit of a chill one this afternoon.
I love that.
This evening.
So feeling a bit sore, feeling a bit tender. What do you do? You could either A, feel sorry for yourself, kick it on the couch and just rub deep heat into your legs, or B, get up and moving, walking around, and you might find that your body feels great, and you're back on the horse and away you go.
Well, it's a good sore.
Good sore.
It's like I feel they have worked. I've worked the muscles. It's a good sore.
Good sore.
It's not like a flu sore.
That's
not a good sore.
No, not a good sore. No. You know, talking about soreness, it is important to reflect on the different feelings you get. Like, you know, soreness in the muscle is a different feeling to like the soreness in like a joint, right? And the soreness, the achy feeling in the joint is something that we kind of don't want from training, but the soreness from like the muscle point is something we do kind of want, and that can help to guide us that we're doing something effective. Now, kind of like our conversation last week about DOMS.
I was going to say, this is giving me DOMS feedback.
Yeah. it's not a requirement. Like, you don't need to be sore, and more soreness doesn't mean more growth.
Mm.
But if you've gone a long period of time without any soreness, question marks can start being placed there of, are you training with appropriate volume or intensity where, you know, are you challenging the muscle and reaching like kind of close to their limit so you can actually have some growth? So if you are kind of in that intermediate to advanced camp and you haven't felt soreness in a long time, there are some question marks there, and you might need to review how you're approaching your training and the overall intensity of your training, so you can experience that little bit of soreness here and there so that we can be confident that we're training close to our limits and we're eliciting some growth.
Eliciting. That's a new one for you this week.
Well, look, I'm all about the newness.
The right? New words each week.
Well, look, it's an exciting week, like always, with our body transformation challenge. It is in week two. Week two is always fun because week one is kind of like new, exciting, like honeymoon period. And week two, we start to transition into like the grind, right? Where things are getting, you know, not as exciting. We're starting to feel the challenges creep into our lifestyle where it's like, well, geez, I've got to find time to get my steps in. I've got to find time to train. I've got to find time to do my meal prep. Last week was fun and exciting. Now it's, now it's hard. So we're seeing some lots of great progress on the Rise Method app, both from inside our group chats. And then on the other side, we can see all the data that you input onto your app. So from our point of view, we can see when you log a workout, when you log a meal, if you reach personal bests and earn a badge, which is really cool to see. So lots of our members are getting personal bests left, right, and center, earning lots of badges, completing lots of milestones, and really getting competitive around the steps. So you can't see it yet, but we are planning to launch a step leaderboard feature soon. And we can kind of see on the backside the amount of steps that folks are doing. So it's really cool to see people are out there being active, getting their steps well over 10,000 steps a day, which is really cool to see. So great to see some progress. Great to see some commitments in the plan.
Love a bit of data.
Love a bit of data. Final thing I'll say is, well, not the final thing.
We've got lots of things to say.
Is that if you are on the back fence a little bit and watching other folks, seeing progress, making changes, you know, kicking goals, and you might be feeling, oh, geez, I haven't committed yet. You know, I'm in week two, I've kind of looked at the plans, it's been busy week one, and these people are, you know, losing weight or seeing progress and seeing changes and putting effort in, but I'm not, that's okay. We've got time, right? Still another, you know, 11 weeks left in this program, and you've still got your entire life of fitness. Mm-hmm. So if you're not seeing the results yet, that's okay. And if you are putting in the effort and the commitment and you're not seeing results yet, that's also okay, because we're only a week in. Right?
Exactly.
And you might have taken a long time to get to the position where you are now, and you can't expect everything to reverse in a week. And realistically, over like a 2-week period, when we make changes to our body, that first 2 weeks of information is kind of irrelevant. When we introduce a new diet, a new training program, our body weight fluctuates up and down, our performance fluctuates up and down, it's a little bit chaotic, and it will take, you know, a week or two just to kind of settle into the groove. So if you are kind of putting in effort and you're not seeing many changes or much progress, how you're measuring your progress, you might just need a little bit of patience so that you can, you know, keep on going.
Well, that's it. I find that when clients come into classes for the first time, let's say we're using a set of dumbbells, we'll pick up a lighter set because, oh, I don't know, like they feel a bit heavy. I don't know how long I'm going to be using it for, blah, blah, blah. And then once you see a few sessions in, they challenge themselves to something a little bit heavier. So a lot of people jump into a challenge and are just still trying to work out what weights to start with, what's heavy, what am I going to do, how do I actually do this exercise. So now they're in week two, moving into week three, you'll see a lot of changes with people challenging themselves within the challenge.
Ooh.
We didn't say BTC this time.
BTC. That's okay. We'll use that. Next comment I'll make is about variation, yeah, or variance. Because you brought up, Laura, where you're saying, you know, if you're introducing a new exercise or a training program, it can take a couple of weeks to kind of figure out the program, mm-hmm, before you actually make significant progress in that program. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you're starting a training program and it has exercises that you haven't done before, let's say a split squat you haven't done in a long time. First week, you're just figuring out your balance in the position. The second week, you're figuring out like the foot position. Should I go longer? Should I go wider with my feet? And then the third week, you use a different bench. You use like a barbell on a rack. Ooh, this is really nice. And then by the fourth week, that's the only week where you actually get some consistency and some progress, because the first week one, week two, week three, you're still kind of like figuring out the exercise. And by the fourth week, that's when you're like, okay, actually, I can put in some effort and see progress for that. So this is why we want to see some consistency in training programs, because yes, different folks need different variety in their programs for their own mental stimulation. But the best programs are effective when you repeat them over time, because it will take you a couple of weeks just to figure out the movement. So for example, with myself, I only really rotate between the same few types of exercises. But even when I rotate into a new exercise, it takes me a couple of weeks just to like re-get the groove again. Okay. So for example, I'm doing lots of safety bar squats right now. I've got a safety bar, love the safety bar. I'm doing lots of safety bar squats, which replicates kind of like a front squat position. So if I moved and transitioned my program into a high bar squat with a barbell, different type of squat, for most folks, you look at that, you're like, oh, it's a squat, squat, a squat. But for me, it's a different movement. So it will take me a couple of weeks just to figure out where my feet kind of go again, and how I groove and how I time my lowering and lifting phase again. And it could take 2-3 weeks before I actually start seeing progress again on that lift. So if you're edging to wants to change your program quickly or trial different programs, just remember that consistency over time is where we see progress and growth. Yeah. Okay. Next part here, I want to highlight our current leaderboards on the Rise Method app. So each month we reset our leaderboards for the monthly leaderboard. And you might have a goal for that month to get in the maybe top 3 placing or the top 10 or in the top 20 or beat the position where you were in the previous month. So being competitive on the leaderboard. So just to highlight the first couple of folks on our leaderboard. So firstly, in the nutrition leaderboard, we have 5 individuals who are in first place right now. And wow. The way that works is you earn 1 point for each day that you have met your nutrition goals. Nutrition goals defined as being within 20% of your calories, your proteins, your carbs, and your fats. So all 4, you need to be within 20%. So you earn 1 point. So there's 5 people that have been meeting their nutrition goals every single day so far. They're on a nice streak. Yeah. Now, these 5 people also have an extra point because they met their nutrition goals on the Sunday before the leaderboard started. Mm-hmm. So there are folks in second place who have not missed a nutrition day, but these 5 folks have been consistent before the leaderboard started. So we've got Angela Adams, who is being really active on our Facebook group. Really
cool. Yeah, we see Angela posting a lot. It's really nice following her journey.
Mm-hmm. We have Crystal, who's also in first aid, mm-hmm. First place. She's posting a lot on the group chats right now, helping lots of other members, which is really cool to see.
Yeah.
We have Holly. Now, Holly is a platinum member, and she's talking to me about how she just passed her federal police exam. Ooh.
Ooh, awesome.
So she's been working hard to improve her fitness and met the benchmark for her beep test, which she was really anxious about. So 10 points to her.
Awesome.
We have Kat, who's also in first place. Kat's just joined us again for this round, kicking goals. And Rochelle. And Rochelle is posting lots of training videos inside the technique advice group chat. So it's always great to see the progress from Rochelle and all of our members who are posting training videos, because it's great to make those adjustments, because those adjustments we do in a short time frame over, you know, this 12-week challenge, but that adjustment sticks with you for life. So if you can improve your bench press now, when you go to bench press next month, next year, in 5 years time, you will have a better bench press. So it compounds over time. So if you want the best way to improve your training and improve your transformation, it is to improve your execution. And you can do that inside the Rise Method app by posting inside the technique advice group chat. Cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. It's good to get some advice and feedback from the coach. Mm-hmm. It's good having that option.
Next, we have the personal bests leaderboard. So the personal best is when you, I guess in the name, have a personal best. But the personal bests are in different categories. You can kind of see them when you open up a exercise. So let's say a bench press. If you click the bench press exercise, you'll see your personal best, which will be like a 1 rep max, a 3 rep max, a 5 rep max, a 10 rep max. Mm-hmm. The most weight you lifted, and then like the most volume you lifted. Right? So they're the types of personal best. So it's not that you lift 100 kilos for 6 reps and the next week you lift 100 kilos for 7 reps and that's a personal best. It needs to be within those categories. So just a few folks that are in the leading position. We have Jennifer, who's in first place on 36 points, who is equal first place with Tony Sudale.
Awesome.
With 36 points. So a bit of head-to-head competition there, which is great. We have Tully, who's in second place, who is on his own transformation journey, and he's been chatting with us about how he is doing his own kind of mini challenge, personal challenge that's wrapping up soon, but he's also joining this challenge which would push him over for the next couple of months. So that's great to see. We have Sherry in third place on 30 points, and Sherry's asking lots of questions inside the group chats, which is amazing.
That's
so that
awesome.
She can get the most out of the app and the platform and then the program that we have. We have Catherine, who is in technically fourth place on 28 points. And Catherine's been a platinum member for a really long time now and is our resident step queen. Sorry.
Resident step queen.
We're going on lots of walks throughout the day. We'll see that in a moment. It's a great journey for Catherine, where it's not so much about the short-term transformation. She's in it for the long haul, which is great to see.
It's a lifestyle.
It is. And finally, we have Joe, who's in fifth place, technically, with 26 points. So first place, 36 points. Fifth place, 26 points. 36, 26. Close. It's a close game, right?
I think Joe was enjoying the split squats a while back, wasn't he?
He was. He's having a great time.
Enjoying was not the right word.
Mm-hmm. Joe's also really active inside the technique advice group chat as well with Rochelle. So great to see.
Great to see.
The commitment to constantly improving yourself, which is awesome. Then our next leaderboard, we have our workouts leaderboard. So currently we have Catherine in first place. So workout leaderboard is you get 2 points for every workout you complete inside the app, and you get 1 point for every activity you do inside the app. So activity could be going for a walk, going for a swim, going for a cycle, that type of thing. So Catherine's first place. Second place, we have Jennifer. Jennifer has been a long-time member with us who has very long-term goals. Mm-hmm. Also really active inside of our over 50s group. So Jennifer, thank you. Third place, we have Chris Dahl, who's also in first place with our nutrition leaderboard. We have
goals.
Jennifer, who's in fourth place, who's also first place in personal best leaderboard. In fifth place, we have Vanessa, who is just smashing and kicking goals. So congratulations to Jennifer. And in sixth place... Vanessa. Mm. And in sixth place, we have Joel. Joel currently injured his hamstring playing cricket and then thought he'd be fine. And I think the following week,
she'll be right.
re-injured his hamstring,
making
it a little bit worse playing cricket again. Joel again, a long-time member with us. So he messages me inside the app as a Platinum member.
Maybe have this week off, Joel, from cricket. Yeah.
So, and look, like, it's great to see folks who have a pain or a discomfort inside their body, and they're like, oh, well, you know, I can kind of push myself. And in most cases, you certainly can. But when you push yourself back to a level where you were previously, that's a recipe for further injury. Mm-hmm. Because remember that pain is kind of like hunger, where it's kind of telling you some information in your body saying that, hey, you might be doing too much. So if you injure your hamstring playing cricket, hey, you might have done too much too quickly. You sprinted, you ran too fast, whatever you did. You might need to like tone it down a little bit so you heal. But if you go back and play cricket at the same intensity, you know, you're kind of going to the same area in your body where that injury could reoccur. And that's what happened, Joel. Sorry, buddy. But hopefully a speedy recovery there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So from here, I just want to quickly talk about setting expectations. And we kind of loosely spoke about it at the very start, where we're talking about, you know, we're in week two and, you know, you might not be seeing the progress that you want to see yet. But remember, we are just in week two. And it might have taken quite a few weeks to get to where you are now. And to make a big change in your body, it might take a few more weeks to see the progress and the results that you want to see. Okay. So the first step that you should do if you want to make real progress is to measure your progress. Okay. Real progress, you've got to measure your progress, because a lot of folks have a ambitious goal. I want to lose weight, or I want to get strong, or I want to buy a house, or I want to run a marathon, or I want to speak German, whatever it is. But there is kind of missing a way to measure that progress, because we're defining an outcome rather than measuring how we're going to achieve that outcome. Okay. So the best way to measure weight loss in progress is to measure our body weight. The reason why is, one, it's really cheap and quick and easy to measure your body weight. You just stand on the scales. You could purchase body weight scales for, you know, $10, $20 from Kmart, and you can measure your body weight frequently. There's other ways you can measure them. Your body composition and your body weight, you can go and pay for expensive scans like BIA in-body scans or DEXA scans. You can use measuring tools like tape measures or apps that can scan your body to do measurements. All those come with their own levels of errors in them, meaning how they record that information. Plus, there is a barrier to using those measures. So for example, you need to pay to use a DEXA scan, or you need someone else to put measurements on you, or you need the measurement tool, mm-hmm. or there's errors in how you actually wrap it around your body and things. So the easiest way is just to measure your body weight on scales. Now, we know that your body weight fluctuates from hour to hour, depending on how much you drink and how much you eat in terms of gut residue and fluid retention. So the best way to measure your body weight is to measure it daily. Log it into the Rise Method app and you could see it plot on a graph. Then when you see a plot on the graph, you can even just eyeball it and say, hey, look, the trend is going down, or the trend is going up, or the trend is staying the same, appreciating the ups and downs.
Would you measure yourself the same time each day? Is that quite important? Or
yeah, so you do want to try to manage as many variables as we can. Mm. So let it be maybe as soon as you wake up, or maybe you wake up, you go to the toilet, and then you measure yourself. Mm. So you want to have some sort of consistency. Because if you're measuring yourself at 6 a.m. one morning, 10 a.m. the next morning, 8 a.m. the morning after, and you know, one day you had breakfast, one day you drank some water, one day you went to the toilet, you know, those types of things, mm-hmm. they're just easy variables that we can self-manage,
yeah.
right? The harder variables to manage are, you know, if it's been really hot and you've been sweating more than you normally do, and it changes the way your fluid inside your body is working. Or maybe you've had a really hard workout on the weekend, went for a big walk, and now it's Monday and your body weight's different because of the inflammation in that. So those types of things we might not be able to easily manage, but managing things like how much water you've just drunk, or if you're going to the toilet, or if you've eaten, are easy things to manage. Next, when we're talking about expectations, for weight loss goals, we're looking at about 0.5 to 1% of our body weight in weight loss per week. Now, this can be really difficult because if you weigh, you know, 75 kilos, 1% of that is 750 grams.
Mm-hmm.
0.5% of that is 375 grams.
Yeah.
So to try to measure, you know, at 0.5% in weight loss can be hard if we're just kind of measuring ourselves randomly at different points. Where, you know, one day you might be 75 kilos, that afternoon you're 74.8, the next morning you're 75.2, and it kind of fluctuates like that. So to measure that 375 grams of weight loss change could just be, you know, how much water you drank, a cup of coffee, right? So the best way to measure that is to take your body weight as an average over the week and then compare your weekly averages. So measure your body weight daily, calculate the weekly average, and then compare the weekly average from one week to the next week.
Right.
Right. Okay. Then if you're comparing the weekly averages from week to week, then we want to see the percentage difference. No point talking about kilos, because if I at 100 kilos lost a kilo versus you at 65 kilos lost a kilo, you can't compare those two numbers. Because
no.
For me, that's 1%. For you, that's like, you know, almost closer to 2% of your body weight. So those numbers are irrelevant. So it is probably better to not talk about weight loss in kilos, but talk about weight loss as a percentage, okay? Just so that we can standardize the rate of weight loss relative to your body weight.
I love that, because some people do get quite disheartened when the scales show they've only lost, you know, 250 grams a week. Whereas, you know, they might see other people losing a kilo and a half, 2 kilos, depending on whatever. So it's nice to change that to just body weight
mm-hmm.
percentage,
yeah.
Because you're still achieving your goals. Everyone's goals are different. Everyone's body weight's different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great way to look at it.
Then you could start making better decisions, because if your weight loss is less than 0.5% per week, mm-hmm. then you could probably look for ways to increase that energy deficit. So we can either review your nutrition goals and decrease your nutrition goals, or you could look for ways to increase your energy expenditure by doing more steps in throughout the day, right? That's if it's less than 0.5% per week. If it is on the other end, if it's greater than 1% per week, so if you are, for argument's sake, 80 kilos and you're losing a kilo a week, that's greater than 1%.
Yeah.
Then we can't be confident that your weight loss is only body fat.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're losing more than 1% of your body weight per week, chances are you are losing overall fluid, or you're losing some muscle mass, or you're losing a mixture of some muscle mass and fluid and some body fat as well.
Yeah, okay. Right.
So this is where like rapid weight loss can be kind of exotic, for lack of better terms, because like, oh, great, look how quickly I'm losing weight. But then we put question marks in there going, well, is the weight loss really body fat or is it other things?
So if like you genuine weight loss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's say you went on a low-carb diet, right? We know that if you reduce your carbohydrate intake, you also reduce your muscle glycogen stores, which in a simple word is the sugar that's stored inside your muscle. When the sugar is stored inside your muscle, it also needs water to be stored in there as well. So what happens is if you go on a low carb diet, you decrease the amount of water and sugar inside your muscle, which makes the muscle weaker. It's not as eager to perform, but your body weight also decreases as well. So you might lose 5 kilos in 3 weeks if you're on a low carb diet, but lots of that is just sugar inside your muscle and water weight. You're not losing any body fats, right? So your body weight goes down, but your body fat total doesn't decrease. So we have a high percentage of weight loss, but it's not the weight loss most of us are looking for where we're trying to lose body fat. Okay. So to be confident that we're losing body fat, we should be losing weight at a rate of about 0.5 to 1% of our body weight per week. Okay. So it's about setting expectations. And it's kind of cool because over 12 weeks, you could be losing between maybe like 6 to 12% of your body weight. Mm-hmm. So let's say me, 100 kilos, I could be losing between 6 to 12 kilos over 12 weeks. Awesome. That's really awesome, exciting. Yeah. But it's about adjusting your expectations. If you're 70 kilos and you're expecting to lose 10 kilos over 12 weeks because you set an arbitrary goal of, oh, I want to lose a kilo a week, that might be on the higher end of the scale where we're risking lots of the side effects of dieting, where the diet is too intense and you may be suffering things like, you know, fatigue and mood swings and lethargy, a decrease in performance in the gym, and then ultimately a higher risk of binge eating and failure of dieting. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to be kind of going into that territory. Make sense?
Yep. Yeah. Set realistic expectations.
Set realistic expectations. All right. So from here, we have a few questions that have come up over the Rise Method app and also inside of our Facebook group. So take us away.
Yes, Coach Steve. So first question here, what calorie burn should I aim for each day?
So the answer to this question is in how we measure calorie burn. So most folks are looking at things like their smartwatches to mm-hmm. predict how many calories they're expending per day. And the truth is smartwatches are really cool. They're really smart, but they're not very smart at measuring energy expenditure or calorie burn, right? And even when we look at literature and studies on smartwatches, even the best smartwatches out there are off by about 30%.
Yeah, okay? Right.
And most of them are averaging about 50% in an error rate. So what that means to us is that the number that you see on your smartwatch as energy expenditure isn't an accurate number. So if it says 2000 or 1800 or 1400, like those numbers are irrelevant, especially when we're trying to compare individuals. So if you're asking what calorie burn should I aim for? Well, my calorie burn might be different to your calorie burn, Laura, or you listener. The calorie burn is individual to that person. So the first problem is when we measure it, it's wrong. And second, we can't give a recommendation on what you should burn because that depends as well.
Yeah.
The best way to use that data is to A, just acknowledge that information exists. B, track it over time. And then C, reflect on if that energy expenditure goes down. So let's say day one, your energy expenditure is 2000 units of energy or calories on your watch. But then day 20, your energy expenditure is now averaging, you know, 1800 calories a day. Mm-hmm. And then on day 40, your energy expenditure is now averaging 1600 calories a day. So regardless of what this watch is telling you, let's say it's inaccurate or accurate, whatever it is, the watch is still suggesting that it is a decrease over time,
mm-hmm.
which is telling us that your energy expenditure while dieting is decreasing, which is what we don't want. So if we are trying to create an energy deficit by either increasing our energy expenditure or decreasing our energy intake. If you're consuming less food, but then it results in doing less activity, so fewer steps, less performance in the gym, or less, energy expenditure, then you're not creating energy deficit anymore. So you're decreasing your calories, then decreasing your energy expenditure, then you need to decrease your calories, decrease your energy expenditure, and it's just a negative feedback loop. So that information can be helpful. What you can see over time is that, well, my energy expenditure is slowly decreasing, and that's the reason why I'm not losing weight, right? So the best thing you could do is either try to maintain that energy expenditure or try to see just a gentle increase in that energy expenditure per day. But you can't expect to increase your energy expenditure every day because it's not exponential. You can't go from like 1,000 to 2,000 to 3,000 to 4,000 calories and keep going for the next year or two, then you're spending 10,000 calories a day. It's not linear like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing to do is just try to observe that data and make sure it's not decreasing too much. Make sense?
Yep.
Yeah.
Another thing to track.
Another thing to track. The second part of that, just on your comment there, was that sometimes lots of information is lots of noise and it just detracts and sometimes distracts us from what we're trying to do. So if you're trying to track your food intake, your energy expenditure, the steps you do, your heart rate variability, your sleep quality, and then all the other, it's just lots of numbers, lots of noise, and it could just make the whole process very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
So the two numbers that I would recommend you look at is one, what you think your calorie intake is as a number. And then that's on one side of the conversation of energy intake. And then when we're looking at energy expenditure, the best way to quantify energy expenditure is through your step count.
Okay.
So if we are wanting to lose weight and we're not losing weight, you can either A, decrease your energy intake, depending on the number of calories you think you're having. So decrease your energy intake, or B, increase your step count. So they're the two levers you can pull to strategically lose weight. All the other inputs can be helpful data, but there can also be lots of noise and be distracting.
Agreed.
Okay. Right.
Question number two, Coach Steve. This one's a little bit of a long one, but it's a good one. I like doing cardio because I get sweaty, get my heart rate up, and feel like I've accomplished something. But I know that lifting weights is important. I always look at my calories burned when lifting weights. I'm lucky if I burn 200 calories and my heart rate barely goes above 120. Am I not lifting heavy enough? Do I need to add some cardio to increase my heart rate at the start?
This is a good question. And I remember seeing it inside of the Rise Method app. And it was a little bit longer of a question with a few extra points. But there's still lots to unpack in this question here. I think the first assumption is that this individual likes doing cardio.
Mm-hmm.
But they also know that there's benefits to lifting weights. The next point they're making is that they're looking at data from their, I guess, smartwatch. And similar to the first question we had, mm-hmm. they're trying to compare the calories that they burnt and then their heart rate. And I think in the longer question inside the Rise Method app, they spoke about how when they did cardio, they have a higher heart rate and a higher caloric burn. And then the third part of the question is, you know, am I not lifting hard enough? So about intensity. And then do I need to add some cardio to increase heart rates? So lots of moving parts in this question. The first answer I'm going to give here is that sometimes we want to try to chase the most optimal or the best program for us. So this person says that they know that lifting weights is important. But they also highlighted that they like doing cardio. They like to feel sweaty. They like to get their heart rate up and they feel like they've accomplished something.
Which is also important because you enjoy it.
Absolutely. So that's the first thing. It's like, it doesn't matter what is optimal or the best or whatever's out there. The thing that trumps all of that is doing what you like.
Exactly.
Is turning up and being committed and wanting to do the thing. So if you like doing cardio, you need to keep doing cardio.
Mm-hmm.
If you, even if weights was the best thing for you, if you didn't like it, there's no point doing it.
Exactly.
You're not going to be excited to go there. You're just going to go through the motions. You probably won't even turn up to it. You won't be consistent with the mm-hmm. plan. So that's the first thing out of everything is that you need to do something that you want to do, that you like to do, regardless on if it's the most optimal or the best. So that could be that if you like doing reformer Pilates, if you like doing yoga, if you like going for runs, if you like doing trampoline classes or spin classes or what was that bungee class we did?
I think it was called bungee.
Bungee, right? So like there's so many areas of fitness and people stick to fitness because one, they do something that they like because fitness is really entertainment in a way.
Absolutely.
And two, if they're doing something particularly with other people. Mm-hmm. People love the social aspect. So if you can socially go and do something like doing cardio with a friend or whatever it is, you will love that, right? So that's the first point to make. The second point is that the energy that we expend when we're doing formal exercise, we call that EAT. So energy activity thermogenesis, right? EAT. Now, your EAT makes up about 5% of your total energy expenditure for the day. So it's really small, right? So if you're burning 200 calories per day, you know, that is still quite high. In terms, if you say that you're burning 200 calories while you're doing your weight session, that's still quite high for a workout, which is awesome. Chances are the way you're measuring it on your smartwatch is incorrect, but let's say it's 200 calories for argument's sake. That's still really great for formal exercise. So formal exercise is really low in terms of the calories that it burns. The next level up, about 10% of our calories goes to the actual digestion of food. 15% of our total calories goes towards NEAT, which stands for non-exercise activity thermogenesis. That's things like our steps. And then the final 70% of our calorie intake goes towards our BMR, basal metabolic rates. That is the energy it takes to keep our heart pumping, our brain working, our skin to grow, and our muscles to grow, and our bones to grow and do their things. So the main point is that the calories we burn while we're doing exercise is really low. When it comes to resistance training, most of the calories actually are expended after the workout. Okay, and we call this EPOC, which stands for excess post-exercise oxygen consumption, right? EPOC. And what that means is that if I do a weight session, I might burn, let's say, 200 calories while I'm doing my weight session, but then over the next 24 hours, we see an increase in oxygen consumption where we're burning more calories than if you didn't do a weight session, right? So when we compare weights to cardio, while we're doing cardio, because it's more volume, because we're moving all the time, you do expend more energy, right? But when you do weights, you spend less energy while you're doing weights, but then you expend more energy over the next 24 hours. So the net difference between the two is very minimal, close to nothing. So if you are choosing to lift weights or do a cardio event, the actual energy expenditure is almost the same over a 24-hour period. But the benefit is that lifting weights, you would be stimulating muscle growth, whereas cardio, you'd be stimulating cardiovascular adaptations, right? So different types of fitness outcomes. The point is that we're not doing exercise to increase energy expenditure, okay? Because it's so small. We're doing exercise so for health benefits, and then we're doing exercise so that we can help our muscles to grow so that we can influence the basal metabolic rate. Okay, our steps is what influences the most weight loss when it comes to physical activity. You following so far?
I am not following. No. Okay. So how do you know these things? Like, there are no notes on this. Like, how do you know these things?
So the second part is talking about our heart rate. Heart rates of, you know, 120 is still within like zone like one, doesn't really go into zone two or into like the higher max area, but it can still be helpful for cardiovascular outcomes. But if you want cardio outcomes, we need to be doing, you know, cardiovascular training. Lifting weights isn't going to be producing the best cardiovascular fitness outcomes, okay? But again, when we're looking at cardio outcomes, when we compare things like walking and running, again, not a huge difference between the two because we're stimulating, you know, zone one, zone two heart rate growth, okay? So the main part of the question is, am I not lifting heavy enough? Do I need to add some cardio to increase my heart rate? The answer really is, it depends on what your goal is. So if you want to improve your heart health and your cardiovascular system, yeah, you might want to find ways to add some cardio training to train your cardiovascular system. Yeah, of course. You want to find ways to continue to challenge your heart rate. That could be by, you know, walking or running or doing whatever cardio you like. It can be, you know, lifting a little bit heavier, but the point with training is that we're training close to failure, not how much we're lifting. So the weight you lift could be subjectively light, moderate, heavy, whatever it is. It depends on the reps you do and how close you get to failure. So that's how we stimulate muscle growth. So lots to unpack in this kind of simple question, right?
Mm-hmm. Not a simple answer.
The main point is that be cautious that you're not getting distracted by data. because there can be lots of noise. Chasing things like calories burnt in during exercise might be misleading, leading you down the wrong path, because we're not trying to make an energy deficit from doing exercise. We make an energy deficit from reducing our energy intake and doing more steps. Okay. Any follow-up questions?
So if we like doing cardio because we like getting sweaty,
do it.
Continue.
That's the first part. Regardless of what I said, if you take that away,
do what
you enjoy, because that's what you'll actually do. That's it.
All right. Question number three, the final question.
Final question.
Okay. And I can relate to this one. I'm noticing that my left arm is not as strong as my right arm when I do a chest press. What can I do to even it out? Now, I have a strong left arm and not as strong right arm, mainly because I carry children on my left-hand side. Same goes with my hips. So what can we do to even it out?
Okay. Well, if someone said this to you in a Pilates class, what would you say to them? You'd say, I don't know. Yeah. Well, that's the answer.
I'll speak to my partner.
No, that's really the answer. So when it comes to...
Because you can't say that you're like a kilo weaker and you just like change a dumbbell. So it can't measure that.
Yeah. Well, so within the question of saying like, I'm not strong enough, there is follow-up questions like, how are you measuring it, right? Because what tends to happen, and I've seen lots of folks do things like, let's say, a dumbbell chest press with either arm. What tends to happen is they're doing the chest press, then their technique would change, their position would change, so that the, you know, one arm, in this case the left arm, which is quote not as strong, would move its position so that it's not effective enough to press.
So, is that because you felt a little bit stronger in the other arm and that one's taken over?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So what can happen is, let's say you're doing a chest press, and then as you're pressing, you might rotate your body just a few centimeters, or you might rotate your shoulder in, or your shoulder lifts a few centimeters. So then now you can't say that the left and the right arm are in perfect symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
So then muscle-wise and strength-wise, the two arms might be the same, or the two legs might be the same for argument's sake, but the way that you're pressing is different, yeah? Or even, you know, let's say right and left-handed. You might be right-handed, so when you're pressing, you require less brain effort to press because you're right-handed, versus your left arm, you need lots of brain effort to press. So what is really easy for your right arm versus your left arm is different. And for some people, their dominant arm fatigues first, maybe like you're experiencing. Whereas others, their dominant arm can go all day, but their non-dominant arm is what fatigues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's lots of question marks in an answer like this. Now, we can sit here and try to figure out why it happens, or we can observe that it does happen and then look for solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So one solution people go towards is they go, well, maybe I need to do more single arm work to build up strength in that other arm. And the problem with that, let's say with a chest press, is that, let's say your average dude at a gym, they're grabbing, you know, 20, 30 kilo dumbbells, whatever, and they're pressing, right? And they're able to press because they're balanced and they're holding the dumbbells in each arm, pressing. But if they just did a single arm chest press, they might only be able to use like 5 kilo or 10 kilo dumbbells because they would roll off. They would fall off. They don't have the same stability. So it turns into a stability thing rather than a loading thing, right? So doing single arm work might not be the best solution. When we try to compare single arm or single leg or unilateral exercises, the way that you do the exercise is different. So let's say you did a lunge with one leg or the other leg. You can't be confident that it's the exact same technique and that exact same pattern and loading either side. So we even put a question mark, is it even useful to do single arm or leg stuff, right? It might be easier even just to use a barbell bench press because then it's balanced between the two, right? Now, the next idea people have is like, well, if I can do 6 reps with my left arm and 10 reps with my right arm, should I stop at 6 reps or should I just let my left arm rest and then do the rest on my other arm, right?
Yeah, okay.
Because then they go, well, I'm not really progressing with my right arm, but like my left arm is what's failing me.
Would you find like a happy medium between both?
I would say that you want to stop the set once you can no longer complete a full repetition. So that would be
with both arms.
With both arms, yeah. So like if you are getting to 6 reps on your left arm, but then you're able to do more with your right arm, the first question is, how do you know that you're able to do more with your right arm? right?
How many more?
Yeah, yeah. How many more? So I would stop at that lower level, yeah. The thing, there's two ideas that would solve this problem, right? Number one is do more reps. Not do more reps as in, oh, okay, I'm going to do 15 reps instead of 10 reps because that's what Steve said. No, you need to do more practice, more volume, more of the exercise, because the answer might be that you just need more practice. So if you're doing chest press once a week, you might need to do it twice a week, or you might need to do it for a longer period of time instead of just a month and you're like, oh, this is happening. You need to do it for another 6 months because you might not know that you're losing position. And you just, as you practice more, you get better at holding your body in a certain shape and having more strength and control and the nervous system going into the muscles doing the exercise. So the first step is you need to do more of it. And that is where most of the answers are in fitness, is you need more practice, yeah, yeah. Need more time, need more patience. Yeah. The second part of the answer is to take some time to film yourself. So when you're doing your chest press, you might be doing something funky that you don't know about.
That you don't know about.
Right? Especially if you compare left and right arms. If I'm observing you, I might be able to see it, but you might not be able to see it on yourself. So if you film yourself and you're like, oh, geez, like once I get to rep 2 or rep 3, my left arm goes out to the side and my shoulder comes up and I do this weird hitchy thing with my body and then my left leg starts twitching and then my neck starts turning. It's like, that's just weird. I didn't know I was doing that. So if you film yourself and review that footage, you might be like, oh, well, what if I pay attention to that, think about it consciously, film myself again, and then you might find, oh, it happens now in rep number 4 or 5. Why is it happening in rep 5 and then I fail at rep 6? Okay, if I solve this position problem and try to keep the symmetry between my left and right arms, then I might be able to solve that problem. Mm-hmm. So the two answers to if you find an imbalance in your body with whatever exercise, a chest press, a lunge or whatever it is to film yourself doing it. Then try
see
to make
if
some,
doing something funky.
See if you're funky. It doesn't need to be what a textbook would say. You might be able to observe it with your eyes and be like, oh geez, when I squat, like I do a little bit of a twerk to one side and then my whole body bends. Like I've got like a scoliosis. It's like, that's weird. You don't need to be a fitness professional or an expert. You might just say, hey, that's not quite right. And then if you try to modify, or even the first step, just be conscious of it. Okay, this is what I'm doing. I need to be aware that I'm not going to do it. Film yourself a second time. Okay, I was better. I need to keep proving and practicing and practicing. And that practice over time can be helpful. You can expedite this slightly by reaching out to us inside places like the technique advice group chat, where, you know, I might be able to see that before you do and go, well, yeah, you don't notice it. Yeah, you don't notice it yet, but you're actually maybe internally rotating at the shoulder, which is causing the elbow to flare out. So you're turning it into a tricep extension rather than a chest press. And those minor tweaks might make this whole process faster than you just putting in lots and lots of practice. So first point is it's super common, happens all the time. Second, you need more practice. And third, film yourself if you're not filming yourself already.
Love it.
Love it. Cool. Look, team, let's wrap it up there. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the weekly show, the Rise Method weekly show. And we'll catch you for week 2. And we'll catch you next week for the next one.
See you then.